Hello, everyone. Happy Friday. Thank you for joining us on a special edition of the Texas Scorecard Friday Roundup. I'm Brandon Waltons, the managing editor of Texas Scorecard. And today we're going to talk about a topic that's on a lot of people's minds. That's the Republican Party of Texas convention, which is this year is now a virtual convention, was originally scheduled to be held in Houston. It's an event that brings thousands of delegates from across the state. It's the largest political gathering in the free world. This year, unfortunately, due to some moves from the Democrat mayor of Houston, Sylvester Turner, kicking them out of the convention center, it's actually been moved online. And if you are a delegate or you have been following it, not a lot's actually happened from a general session perspective. Unfortunately, there were some technical problems plaguing it yesterday. So it's now been delayed a couple of days. It was originally supposed to have started yesterday. Now it's going to be starting tomorrow on Saturday. And so we'll be following that throughout the weekend. But I wanted to talk with Matt Stringer, our West Texas Bureau chief out there, who this week took off his Empower Texans hat. Actually, Matt, you were there as a member of the Temporary Legislative Priorities Committee. And these committees actually met in person. These were not virtual. So for three days, groups actually did meet in Houston to kind of do a lot of the preparation work on the things that will be voted on at the convention. You were following the legislative priorities. First of all, let me ask you, I was down there for a couple of days, but what was the environment there in Houston like with the convention moved virtually, and yet you did still have a lot of people come and testify at these committees early on in the week?
Well, good morning, Brandon. I did have the honor and privilege of serving Senate District 31 on the Temporary Legislative Priorities Committee. We met there at the Marriott Hotel next to the Convention Center in Houston in person beginning Monday morning, and everything went great. We had a lot of delegates come in spite of everything going on from all across Texas to show up to speak with us and to sign up to testify. And we took hours and hours of testimony from delegates in person, plus we took an hour or two of testimony online virtually towards the end from delegates across the state who weren't able to make it. Everybody was, of course, had all of the going-ons of the shutdown and the battle of having that in-person meeting on their minds, but that didn't distract them too much from focusing on the party's business and the very important issues facing our party and our state going forward.
And I think what really struck me as interesting being there was, you know, obviously it's a smaller group than normal. But the people you did have down there, you had a lot of really, really passionate activists making their cases to have their issues put in the platform, strengthen the party platform, or made a legislative priority. But like I said, I want to talk to you about this Legislative Priorities Committee. So, you know, what exactly is, maybe explain for folks, you've got the party platform. We all know it's a pretty big, pretty all-encompassing document with a lot of planks. But then now we've got, it's a relatively recent addition, these legislative priorities. What's the difference?
So the legislative priorities will be eight issues that are identified to be the most important issues facing our state for the Republican Party that we are asking our legislators in the upcoming legislative session that we have to address and accomplish into passing these issues into law. The way it works is before convention starts, every one of your SREC members, which are elected by state senate districts around the state, appoint your temporary committee members. And we have, I think, four different committees. You have the platform and resolutions, rules, credentials, and the legislative priorities. Right. And so what we do is after we're appointed, we get a Google file that has all of the resolutions that were written and passed by delegates in their county and Senate district conventions from all around the state, particularly my Senate district. So I have to go through and read every resolution, sort them by category, and review them and start deliberations with other committee members. And then beginning bright early Monday morning, we met in person. We took the different categories that we'd sorted out from resolutions across the state, and we broke off into subcommittees, categorized into constitutional rights, property taxes and taxpayer-funded lobbying, and then state affairs. I ended up on the state affairs subcommittee, where we looked at probably one issue that was the garnered the most attention and had the most resolutions and input out of all of them, it seemed, and that was reining in the emergency powers of the governor, county judges, and mayors across the state, among some other issues that we handled in state affairs.
Yeah, so I'm looking at this kind of document, looking at some of these legislative priorities. Y'all picked 15, and normally there's five. Y'all picked 15. The delegates, the idea or the plan is for delegates to whittle that down, vote on their top eight. But that emergency powers resolution, I mean, I think this is this can't be understated. It's number one on the list, you know, this is something that we've seen a lot of county parties who have taken actions to censure Governor Greg Abbott, essentially formally rebuke him for his executive orders during the coronavirus. But this takes aim right at that and says, look, the legislature needs to come back and we need to restrict this. We can't, and through a number of ways, we can't have these repeatedly extended 30 days at a time, emergency powers resolutions. We need to actually have the legislature meet. That's what we elected them for.
We had a tremendous amount of input from delegates and concerned citizens across the state on this issue. Sifting through the resolutions from around the state, we could see the elements of the reforms people had in mind. And so we tried to craft an emergency powers resolution that took all of these issues that were clear, that had tremendous importance to people across the state, and address each one of those issues. For example, there were a lot of people concerned about the governor's ability to suspend and create laws, basically taking away the power of the legislature and drawing a huge separation of powers issue. That was very important to people. The mandates issue, mandating the wearing of masks. There's a lot of people who are worried about the potential that if a vaccine for COVID-19 comes along, that they'll use this executive power to force a mandatory vaccine order upon us. And so that wording in there specifically cites those two concerns. Another one was a lot of people stress that we're a representative republic and that these major issues should be addressed by our legislature and our duly elected representatives, and there should be debate and deliberation and transparency, and the people should have the ability to call their local state representative up and make a difference on these decisions. It's something that they've been deprived of all of this time. And so we wrote in there that for any emergency order lasting over 30 days, that the deliberative body having jurisdiction over it, whether it's the city council, the commissioner's court, or the Texas legislature, shall be convened to address that emergency situation, rather than just going on in perpetuity, making up laws and doing things that have denied the rights of due process and liberty to millions of Texans.
Right. And so that's, you know, that's number one. That's a new priority. Kind of look at, you know, some of these other ones: constitutional carry, religious freedom, taxpayer funded lobbying. These are a number of things that were legislative priorities in one form or another last cycle as well. You know, there is a few new ones, a few other new ones. One of them, I think, equal parenting is in there. And this is, again, this kind of goes back. I mean, the people who showed up to these in-person meetings really, really are getting to see the fruit of their work, because this is something that was not really on a lot of people's radar. And now it's right there, potentially going to be a legislative priority.
It is. We had a lot of resolutions for equal parenting come in across the state. My home county of Ector County in Odessa passed one, as a matter of fact. And the delegates who showed up testifying in support of it were extremely passionate about the issue and articulated a position very well, arguing that, you know, we need to change the laws, reform the laws to make it to where both parents will have the ability to have an influence in the child's life and the impact that that could potentially have. So I think the testimony and the feedback that the committee members got from around the state was very persuasive on that issue. And that's why I believe it made number six in the current recommended legislative priorities.
Another one here, parental rights. This one actually is pretty interesting to me. It's pretty, again, this is actually encompasses a few different issues. But I'm just reading it. The legislature shall not infringe in any way on the rights of the parent with regard to their children, including but not limited to education and any medical procedures. You know, again, this is something that encompasses not only education and homeschooling and things like that, but also Texans for Vaccine Choice, who was as well down there during these meetings.
Yes, Texans for Vaccine Choice had a tremendous presence at the committee hearings this past week. Shout out to those two ladies. They did an amazing job. So you technically have kind of an indirect mention in that provision, plus you have the direct mention in the emergency powers resolution that I was able to get in, you know, mentioning that we are against a vaccine mandate in Texas law. Real quick, I wanted to touch on something that you mentioned just a little bit earlier. Some of these issues, such as banning taxpayer-funded lobbying and constitutional mm-hmm. carry gun rights. If you remember back in the primary, the SREC had put a number of issues on the March Republican primary ballot for Texas Republicans to vote on and express their position on these issues. And these are some of the issues that Texas Republicans have voted on and that carry overwhelming mandates from the people. So not only are we getting, you know, delegate testimony and feedback and resolutions to help craft these, but some of these issues we can point to direct mandates from the people to carry these issues into law. And that's something that people, whenever they talk to their legislators about these issues, you can go pull up the vote results in each county of a legislator's district, pull up the vote results statewide and show where these issues are carrying 90-95% plus of the popular vote electorate support for these issues. I remember last legislative session, banning taxpayer-funded lobbying narrowly lost with a number of Republican legislators joining the Democrats and voting it down in the House. And you can actually go and look at some of these elected Republicans and how their districts voted on this particular issue and see a contrast between how their legislator is voting and how their constituents want them to vote per how they voted on these issues. And that's a tool, I think, that can help empower people as they talk to their elected representatives about these issues.
Well, exactly. I mean, it's just another tool that activists can use when the legislature reconvenes next year to be able to push for the priorities and for the reforms that they are fighting for. And that's an absolute great tool. I want to ask about one more priority, then we'll talk about what happens next. But this one I know has a really interesting story. It's almost bizarre. It's actually sad, to be honest. I was able to see some of this testimony. There's one priority here for abolishing the 10-day rule. Essentially, if folks are familiar with this, you had the case of baby Tinsley Lewis back in November, who was sort of the poster child case for this Texas law. Essentially, it allows hospitals to refuse treatment to essentially remove life-saving treatment from patients over the objections of the families and in some cases actually the patient themselves. I've heard stories of. And Texas Right to Life has been an organization that has really been championing this issue for a long time, and especially in the light of the baby Tinsley Lewis case. However, there was one person testifying against this resolution who had some very interesting things to say. Why don't you talk about that?
That's right, Brandon. And that testimony got a lot of chatter on Facebook afterwards. The head of Texans Alliance for Life, Mr. Joe Poyman, testified before our committee in support of this 10-day law. That's, quite frankly, if you look at the elements of it, it's a fairly terrifying thing. Afterwards, an SREC member posted on Facebook described how Poyman was supporting the compassionate terminations for ill patients and some other kind of alarming statements that was made during the testimony. I was having a hard time following the testimony because I was acting as presiding chair at the time. So I was catching surprising sound bites and that sort of thing, and mainly conducting the meeting and allowing the other members to further question the witness and expand on some of these thoughts. And so afterwards, it got a lot of attention and got a lot of activists chattering.
I think a lot of negative attention for sure. We've known for a long time, Texas Alliance for Life has long been a group that has supported, given pro-life cover to establishment lawmakers who don't have spotless pro-life voting records. That's one thing. It's another thing to see them literally advocating against a priority that would save lives potentially. So absolutely wild. So those committees wrapped up. Those in-person committees wrapped up on Wednesday. Now what are the next steps, especially with the fate of this virtual convention still sort of in flux, the schedule being nailed down? What is the next action to happen?
Well, so late last night, the SREC voted to stand at ease until tomorrow morning, Saturday morning, where we'll gavel in and begin the convention. And it's supposed to occur Saturday and Sunday. The next procedure is supposed to be that we convene by Senate District Caucuses, where I have to give my temporary Legislative Priorities Committee report and get elected as the permanent Legislative Priorities Committee member. And as soon as that happens, I'll be able to go back with my hopefully all of the other wonderful members of the temporary Legislative Priorities Committee will get onto the permanent, and we'll be able to get and finalize the 15 that we'll propose to the general body. And that will be our one last opportunity to make any final tweaks. And one thing that I want to point out to people is whenever you look at the PDF file of the proposed temporary legislative priorities, at the bottom, there's five issues that includes verifying the citizenship of voters, decriminalize delinquent toll fees, e-verify, medical billing transparency and doctor freedom, and bond election reform. We have the option to rotate any one of those into the current 15. So please take a look at those. Reach out to your permanent committee members and let you know if you want any kind of adjustments made, or if you prefer any one of those issues. Then after we vote to finalize those 15 issues, they'll go to the body. Only 8 will become the legislative priorities. And as far as what I understand is the general voting delegates will get to vote on each one of those issues, and they get to decide which one of these becomes the most important, the number one issue, and which one of the 8 become the legislative mm-hmm. priorities.
Yes, and we just about to drop those priorities into the comments here if you're watching with us on Facebook. But thank you, Matt. And it's not just these legislative priorities. We've also got the platform. We've also got voting for electors to the electoral college, national delegates, and of course the chairman's race, vice chairman's race, SREC. A lot of stuff to happen, but really great to focus on these legislative parties, because I think that's a very, very important aspect of what happens at convention.
It absolutely is, Brandon.
Well, thank you for joining me, Matt. I've got a question from Sean. Sean asks, Texas Alliance for Life advocating for eugenics or euthanasia? You know, you know, you can look at the definitions of euthanasia. I would argue, I mean, Matt, would you say, I mean, it, this 10-day rule, why don't you explain? Somebody else actually wants to know, what is the 10-day rule? Can you give kind of a succinct explanation? I know it's a little complicated.
So as I understand it, the 10-day rule is where a committee of medical professionals at a hospital can make a decision after 10 days on whether or not to continue providing life support to a patient that's in a critical situation. As our DFW correspondent Robert Montoya has reported extensively on the Tinsley Lewis issue, the hospital was wanting to take her off of breathing support, which would unquestionably have caused her to suffocate and die if she can't breathe on her own. This is basically an advocation of changing the law so that the family can have the say and not allow something like that to happen. And here we are so many months later, and baby Tinsley Lewis is still alive. And so that speaks to how badly we need to reform that law and adjust our laws to be side on the with life. Mm-hmm. In Texas.
Yeah.
As far as, and real quick, as far as Poyman's testimony, one SREDC member described it on Facebook as compassionate terminations that he was advocating for. If you want to see the testimony, you can go to the Republican Party of Texas YouTube page and look at either day two or day three of the public testimony and listen to it for yourself there.
Yes, and one more question from Steph. Why only 8 priorities in the end? I think it's important to remember, normally there's only been 5 priorities.
Yes, so we're actually getting an extra 3 this time. And that's not actually something that we decide as a committee. I believe it's actually the Rules Committee that gets to decide how many legislative priorities that we get to set. So every one of these 15 are undoubtedly important issues, and I wish we could keep them all. But unfortunately, that decision isn't within my capability. So,
And of course, if you have, you know, if you have 20, 30, 40 priorities at a point, they don't become priorities, right? That's just how that happens. So.
short is a good thing. That way it gives a big target for lawmakers can't miss or shouldn't
That's
miss.
Right. Well, shouldn't miss. We'll find out. We'll find out next session. Quick shout out to some folks watching. Joel Starnes watching. Hello. Hazel from Fort Worth. Yvette in South Lake. Frank from Gorman, Sean from Grapevine. Again, thank you for joining us. If you have any further questions, please feel free to drop them down in the comments. But for right now, we're going to be watching this convention, this virtual convention. It's now starting tomorrow. It's going to be online. If you're not a delegate, you want to check out the action, you can watch it at the Texas Republican Party, Texas Republican Party's YouTube page. Or you can follow our coverage at texasscorecard.com. Again, thank you so much for watching and have a great weekend.
Thank you for listening to this week's Friday Roundup from Texas Scorecard. Remember, you can head to the Empower Texans Facebook page at 11 a.m. every Friday to watch the show live and get your questions in.